and welcome to the multiverse.
No, that was last week.
I thought that was the name of our podcast now.
Is that what we decided?
I mean, that's what I remember. I was pretty drunk, though.
Exactly. What you remember may not be reliable.
But, all right. So, I don't know. Anyway, I'm Marco.
And I'm Dez of Dez and Marco, the name of the podcast.
But, okay. All right. I think we need to discuss this yes. further. I genuinely thought we changed name. Anyway, before we get started with another themed episode, and that might be the theme of this season, what beer have you picked for this evening?
So this is a brewery which we've discussed before, and I was trying to see if I could make the name of the beer linked to the theme of the episode, but I've given up on that. So the beer is called Luminous Nights, and it's brewed by 71 Brewing, which is a independent brewery from Scotland, specifically from the city of Dundee. I have reviewed their beers before, maybe even this one, but I'm pretty sure I haven't. And they have been really good in the past, so I'm actually quite looking forward to this. It's a Kveik, which I know is now a type of hop,
okay.
IPA. What are you drinking?
Okay. I have a beer from a brewery that I also reviewed ages ago, and I really hope it's not the same one, although I don't think it is. But the brewery is a Dutch one. It's called Gebrouwen door Vrouwen, which translates to brewed by women. So it's like an Amsterdam brewery that was started by these two sisters. And the beer, it's a Bloesem Blonde, which is a blonde beer, much like the two sisters. And it's a blonde beer with some elderflower.
Nice. Okay, so
we'll see.
Without further ado, let's have our beers.
Yes. Cheers.
Cheers.
Also, we're recording on a Friday night, so we could have like 100 of these.
I've already had beers this evening, as a matter of fact. And on the plus side, this beer has been in my fridge for a week. It's like perfect.
Oh yeah, no, me too. I bought these for the last time we recorded, which honestly was ages ago, but it's been in the fridge.
Don't forget, we're not telling the audience when we record, yet you keep telling them when we record.
Yeah, it's a Friday night. What's the year? Anyway, before we get started, I want to give you a little update. I am in the best of moods these days.
Okay, that's good. That's good. I like this.
I mean, there's a reason. You're supposed to say like, why?
Okay, why are you in such a good mood? Please inform me.
Yeah, so remember how my Vamoof bike was broken? And the company went bankrupt and every part is bespoke, so no one could fix it.
Yeah.
They're back and it's fixed.
Really? Nice. Yes.
I got it fixed this week, last week. The concept of time in podcast doesn't really matter. But the company is back. They've started selling bikes, no longer through their own stores because they don't have any, but via some selected retailers or resellers. And they now have like a support network, or not support, but like a repair network. So like some bike shops can now get like replacement parts and actually replace parts for you. So I had the shifter replaced. But they've also started selling their like flagship model, which is, it's actually the only one they have now, the S5, I think it's called. But yeah, they're back. So they've, they went bankrupt. They were losing money basically with every bike that they were selling. And then they got acquired by McLaren Applied Technologies or something. I can't remember the exact name of the, I mean, the Formula One people. And so after waiting for 2 months to schedule the appointment to get it fixed, I finally got it fixed and now I'm riding like the wind.
Nice. I mean, I guess this was possibly the second best scenario. The best scenario would have been that, you know, Vanmoof would have continued the shops and everything. But that just wasn't sustainable by looks of things. It was...
No, it isn't. It really wasn't. And that was the reason why it was so bad. Or why they went bankrupt in the first place. The only shitty thing, and actually The Verge has a really good article on this, is the fact, or The Verge kind of updated its review of their latest bike in light of what has happened, like with the company, and also the bike itself has been updated or has been slightly re-engineered by McLaren to make it more reliable and maybe a little bit cheaper to maintain. Going back to what I was saying, the only not so great thing is that the old Van Moof company used to offer a couple of services which were really, really nice. One of it was the, like, if your bike gets stolen, their bike hunters go and find it for you. And if they don't find it, if they don't find your bike, they give you another one for free. Yes, it's great. And so this new Van Moof doesn't do that. And the second one was you could get, I think it was called Peace of Mind. And it was essentially like a 2-year, 3-year, all maintenance included kind of package, which you would have to pay for. But then given the reliability or lack of reliability of these bikes, it would almost pay for itself. So the new Van Moof company doesn't have to honor that because
it's a completely different company.
It's a different company, same name, same everything, but yeah. So it was pretty, so I had to pay for this, for the shifter to be replaced, which was a bit expensive, but I can ride my bike. So that's the important thing. Anyway, moving on to the actual theme.
Can I just delay it with one piece of news? Another piece of news. It may or may not be interesting, but Apple a while back now came out with the AirTags.
Yeah.
And they are really good. I've got, but they leverage the iPhones, which are out in the wild, to obviously relay the location of the tags. And it's also used to find other Apple products. Like, you got an iPhone, you lose it. Any other person with an iPhone and Bluetooth will kind of ping the location of that phone back to you.
Yeah. Also, Van Moof bikes.
There you go. So one of the criticisms of this was that Apple, in very un-Apple-like fashion, kind of overlooked the stalking element.
Yeah.
And Google actually delayed its equivalent Find My Phone service, which was going to leverage the Android phones out in the wild to provide a similar service. Because you've got like the likes of Tile and other companies like Chipolo,
yeah, Samsung,
whatever.
Has one.
Exactly. Yeah. And like Samsung's relies on Samsung top of the line phones to find, to create its network. But the other ones like Tile, they require you to have the Tile app. So not many people have that. It's not a reliable network to find things. But it is very good. For example, I can't find my keys and I make it ring sort of thing. Yeah. But Google, literally this week, maybe next week, depending on when we're recording, they've started rolling out their Google service. And apparently the delay, like over 2 years, was because they were waiting for Apple to release their anti-stalker updates before releasing their own version, which has the privacy protection features.
Okay.
So basically, if for example, you know, I gave you a tag to stalk you, you will receive a notification on your phone saying there is a...
Yeah, an AirTag with you.
In your presence for over X amount of time to warn you. And apparently, I don't know how or why, but Google had to wait for Apple to implement these changes before releasing their network.
Okay.
I don't know the behind-the-scenes story behind that, but it wasn't a Google-led delay. It was something that they had to wait for Apple to fix before releasing their thing, which is interesting. I don't know more about it, but I thought that was similar to your bike problem. Like, these networks are pretty good. Imagine now a tag which leverages every Android phone to create a network to find your devices. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's actually great. Yeah.
Okay, that was just the news. And now we can move on to the theme of the episode,
which is Samurai.
Every subheading will be said like that.
Okay, let's do it. Challenge accepted.
We are the least knowledgeable people on Japanese culture, but we like samurais.
I mean, or you mean samurai.
Samurai! So it's a brief episode because there's a lot of things currently out in all forms of media which kind of revisit the beloved, iconic Japanese samurai and Japanese culture in general. And so we were going to talk about a couple of the most recent examples of things that you should either experience or know about, which are based on the samurai and the Japan that once was.
Yeah, and much like our previous episode, where it seemed like we were watching and playing a bunch of Spider-Man things, all of a sudden, the same pretty much is happening with samurai. Where do you want to start? Should we start with games or?
I think you should start with maybe the most comprehensive review.
Right.
You need to save a subheading in your voice.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, go ahead.
So one game that I recently played, and I know it's been out for a while. It came out, I think, towards the twilight years of the PlayStation 4. Actually, it came out alongside The Last of Us Part 2. And so maybe it was a little bit overshadowed by it. Was Ghosts of Tsushima.
So excuse me, what was that?
Ghost of Tsushima.
Oh, that's much better.
Yes, hi. Arigato.
On the PlayStation 5.
That may be one listener in Japan. So this game is a open world game where you play as this one samurai. And the story is actually pretty cool where you play on this island, Tsushima, and you're one of the samurai there. And the Mongols come and invade, and you basically have to defeat them and push them away. The way your character evolves is actually pretty cool because you learn new moves, you gain new weapons, but essentially you lose what makes you a samurai.
A samurai. I've not played this. I've only seen you play it on the PlayStation 5. And at this point, you'd already done everything in the game.
Yeah.
Everything. You showed us the introduction. And I think the cool thing about this is you are said samurai and you have the samurai code instilled into you. The Mongols completely overwhelm the samurai force. And essentially, you are saved slash trained by someone who's considered dishonorable.
Yes, a thief.
A thief. As you said, you are learning, you're evolving by not strictly following the samurai code. And that's what really is quite cool, because from the little experience that I've noticed about it, there's literally a story of growth, but with a lot of respect to traditional Japanese culture. So, I mean, it's a fun game, but it's also very respectful of like the Japanese culture that you feel like you kind of learn from it.
Yeah, exactly. And there's some truth to that, as in the Mongols actually did try to invade Japan, but then they didn't. It wasn't because of this one guy that pushed them back. But whatever, like there's some sort of touch with reality. Like you said, the cool thing is you start off the game and you're bound by this code and bound by this, like the honor, and you get taught about how you have, like when you kill your enemy, you have to be looking at them in the eye. And so you shouldn't be sneaking up on them, and you shouldn't be using like stealth and that kind of stuff. As you progress through the game, you learn from this thief who eventually becomes your friend. And then you, the more you observe the Mongols, the more you see that, like, the reason why they took over this whole island is because of their tactics and they use explosives, they use sneaky tactics, they use things that the samurai are not necessarily used to, or they don't even understand. And so then, like, as the story progresses, you free some other friends of yours, including a family member. And then there's sort of a struggle because your new ways are effective, but they're not what the Shogun wants back in the capital. So the story itself is actually pretty cool. And like you said, it's a very... like it's a story of growth, and your character changes as you progress through the game, as well as you learn new You learn new tricks. You get little weapons like little knives that you can throw and little smoke bombs and actual explosives. So you start losing your older ways. The absolute highlight of the game is the combat, because like a samurai, you have a katana and like it's just so satisfying to like there's parts where you're actually dueling with someone, and the combat itself, the way you move, the controls, everything is just spot on. And it, I mean, not that I know how it must be like to do a sword fight, but it's just so satisfying. It's you actually feel like you're immersed in this. And there's tons of enemies to kill, and eventually, you know, you have to kill all the Mongols, and it's just a ton of fun to play, and I couldn't put it down. Much like the Spider-Man games that I was talking about last time, this is a huge open world, and there are tons of collectibles and tons of, you know, you can collect flags, you can collect Mongol artifacts, you can collect headbands. There's so many things, and it's actually, it takes a lot of time, but it's actually not that difficult to find every item. So a completionist like me will spend hours doing everything. The other thing that really makes this game stand out is, even though it was a PlayStation 4 game that I believe was remastered or reissued for PS5.
Yeah, like a next-gen update.
Yeah, as in it wasn't like a whole new game. But anyway, this is previous-gen game. It looks incredible. This is possibly the most beautiful game I've ever played. The scenery, it's very like Japan with like the cherry trees.
Cherry blossoms.
And it's just beautiful. It gave me some, you know, like Breath of the Wild. I mean, it's not graphically impressive, but you know how, you know, like when you're looking down at a valley and it's just, and the sun is like hits it just right. It just looks incredible. Like you just stop and watch the game. This is the same, but way nicer. And it's an island, but it has all sorts of terrain, like mountains, seaside, meadows, and like little towns, little cities, or not cities, but towns. And so it's got a bit of everything, and it just looks so good. One interesting mechanic that it has, or not mechanic, but one interesting theme that it has is the use of nature. Nature is sort of very present, and it's used to kind of guide you through the game. As in, there's some shrines that you need to, no, you don't need to, but you can visit. To find them, you need to follow the foxes. Like there's foxes all over the place, and you follow them. And then once you find the little shrine, you can actually pet the fox, which is always satisfying. There's the headbands I mentioned earlier. You find them by following these yellow birds. The way also that that you go from like one waypoint to the other, or when you set up a mission, or you decide to go and do a mission, is you follow the wind.
Yeah, so you did show me that, and like you see the wind rustling the leaves, which points you towards where you should go. I mean, how many things have we seen where there's like a big digital arrow which is just like blotched there? And you know, this is meant to be feudal Japan, and the developers respect that, and they have found creative ways to incorporate Japanese ideals like the respect for nature and the seasons and stuff into how the game works. It's like really nice.
Yeah. Like there's nothing distracting you from the experience in a way. And even, I mean, you put it beautifully, as in how it's incorporated into the gameplay and how it's seamless. You know, like you just follow the wind and you go to your next objective. And also, there's one thing that I didn't really pay attention to it until I read about it. The weather also changes. It can snow, it can rain, it can be like, you can have thunderstorms, or it can be sunny or whatever. The more you use less, say, honorable ways, the worse the weather becomes.
Oh, wow.
So
cool.
As you descend into like sneakiness and stealthiness and using dishonorable weapons, like throwing a knife or smoke bombs, the weather on average becomes worse and worse. Like, it's more like thunderstormy and everything.
That is so cool.
But you also learn like little songs to play on your flute that change the weather. So every time it would just change.
So you can be as evil as you want as long as you can play the flute.
Yeah, that is the message in the game. Yeah,
the moral code is clear.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can be an awful person, but if you can play music right,
all is forgiven.
Yeah.
Okay, so speaking of the game, you played it on the PS5 after the next gen update. So originally released for the PS4. Is that correct? Yeah. So Sony exclusive until now. So following this change in Sony's strategy, a lot of their biggest exclusive hits are coming to PC. And as with most things, it comes after like a 2-year delay. We spoke about it on the show. They did port The Last of Us, the remastered version, to PC, and it was terrible, which is such a shame. And they have fixed it, but the release was less than ideal. And the good news is that the port for Ghost of Tsushima will be handled by the good company that Sony acquired. It's on my wish list. I will probably pre-order it, even though I'm not a big fan of pre-ordering. But in this particular case, I know it's a good game.
Better than that.
Exactly.
It's a really good game.
And they've already said that it's going to be available for PC and portable devices, i.e. the Steam Deck, because let's be honest, there's not another one.
No, there's quite a few now.
That is true, but they're not as... Like, the Steam Deck is probably the most mainstream. But you're correct. There are quite a few. But you need to be in the know. I think they're still quite niche products.
Yeah.
But nevertheless.
But worry not, listener. By listening to us, you will be in the know.
Yes. Like, I will let you know. Don't. It will be much later than you want to know or need to know. But you will know.
Eventually.
So that's an interesting side note. It will come to PC. So again, the only people missing out are Xbox users.
Yeah, I feel like they're missing out on a lot. But never mind. Also, I have not played it or anything, but it's actually curious how popular samurai are in current culture, because there's another video game that just came out recently that's called Rise of the Ronin on PlayStation 5. Reviews are okay, like good, but they're not stellar. Let's put that. So I might pick that up at some point in the future and we'll talk about it again.
I'll just go a little bit on a tangent. I don't want to talk about games for too long. If you prefer a different style of game, do you remember the old PC game Commandos?
Yeah, I think we used to play it in your... like childhood bedroom. Like
bedroom. Where we were, very possibly. I used to love it. And I think that's a very beloved game. And there's never been anything quite like it since. And so if you don't know, like Commandos was kind of like you took charge of a crack team of SAS soldiers in World War II. And you were always sent to do like these missions. And so you kind of had a top-down view where you'd control these 5 or 6 characters. And they all had like specific skills. Like one guy was the strong guy who could like kill people instantly. One guy was the mechanic who could drive vehicles and use machinery. One guy was stealthy and could like climb up buildings and infiltrate. And one guy was a sapper. Sorry, so he could use like explosives and tools and stuff like that. And you had to coordinate all of them to succeed in your mission. And you know, you had this big map and you'd like control them and coordinate. So imagine that, but in feudal Japan.
Oh, okay.
So this has got ridiculously good reviews. The game is called Shadow Tactics, and it's a 2016 game, which you can now pick up for pennies. And I actually picked it up for free because Epic was giving it away. And
Really?
Yeah, it's really good. And you can control many characters, including a samurai, as well as like, a geisha and whatever, a ninja.
Geisha?
There's one who distracts. She's like a courtesan and she'll distract like enemy soldiers and then kill them. But it's really good. So imagine like a big Japanese kind of castle and you have to like, you know, go through the village, avoid the enemy samurais to like, you know, intercept the letter, for example. It's just so good. But it's the kind of game where you have to save every 30 seconds. And what else? It's each level will take you a good 2 hours. And so it's not like a casual pick up game. And does work very well with PC, even though it has got controller input. It's best played on like with mouse and keyboard. Just a side note, it's also like steeped into that samurai mythology. It's really, really, really good. And I don't think I'm going to dwell on the video game aspect of the samurai for the rest of the episode, which makes us move on to what? Shall we do TV?
Let's do TV.
This is topical. We mentioned samurai, and right now on Disney Plus, there is a huge series called Shogun, and it's actually a remake of a 1970s TV series, which was based in turn on a book of the same name called Shogun. The crazy thing is, it's actually based on a true story, and the true story is, and the premise of the series is that it's the year 1600. Portugal has a monopoly on trade with Japan. And the Japanese being the sort of very inward-looking culture.
Yeah, very closed.
Yeah, very closed. And, you know, they basically don't allow any other foreigners. And the British, quite keen on breaking this monopoly, sent a fleet of ships to start trade or have contact with Japan. The expedition goes disastrously to the point that literally everybody dies and only one ship actually makes it with very few people left on board. One of which is the main character. Basically, he comes to Japan at the right/wrong time. The shogun has just died and his, let's say, successors have got an uneasy alliance, an uneasy truce. And so there's a lot of plotting and scheming and politics coupled with culture shock of an outsider just arriving. So his life is constantly in jeopardy in the early stages. And the show is really, really good. It's got like high production values. It's full of like samurai and the Japanese code and like Bushido and the seppuku, you know, like people killing themselves because they've dishonored or spoken out of place. And, you know, people performing actions purely out of duty and honor whilst there's like grand scheming in the background. It's honestly fantastic. My one warning is that you have to kind of concentrate to watch it because it's got so much Japanese that you're just reading subtitles.
Oh, okay.
So it's good. It's really nice to watch. It's very immersive, but you know, you can't do it while looking at your phone because you don't know what they're saying unless you speak Japanese.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? A little side note. I actually like those shows because I pay attention.
Yeah, I agree.
I put my phone down and I just watch because everything else I just kind of like watch and then play with my phone and then watch Instagram or whatever and then get totally distracted. So not necessarily a bad thing.
No. And unlike the other streaming services, at time of recording, this is still being released on a weekly basis. The whole first series isn't out yet, but so far it's really good.
Okay. It was on my list to check it out.
Oh, I would recommend it. If you liked Ghost of Tsushima, you know, you like samurai culture or you have a bit of interest in Japan or just a bit of political drama even, like this is good. Like this is really, really good.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'll definitely check it out. On what did you say?
Disney Plus. Okay. I'm pretty sure it's Disney Plus across the world, but I might be wrong. Maybe not in Japan.
So we'll do an apology episode next time, whatever. Moving on, another, actually an animated series that came out recently on Netflix this time that centers around a character who is a samurai is Blue Eye Samurai.
I think you told me to start watching this and ironically, you haven't seen it all and I fell in love.
Oh, it's great. I like the episodes I've seen. I think I've got like two left. But the episodes I've seen, it's just great. Like, it's such a cool story and it's original. And the animation looks great. And it's very Japanesey with like, I don't know, there's like a blade on the screen, like going like, phew, and then there's like blood all over the place. It's
I know, like one swipe kills and, you know, like my blade is so sharp. You know, it's like, oh, a lot of themes about like dedication, honor, sacrifice,
revenge.
I know it is, it's phenomenal. And the animation is fantastic. It's just so good.
Yeah. Don't want to give away too much of the plot, also because I don't know how it ends.
Because you haven't seen it all.
Yeah, because I haven't seen it. I just saw the trailer. It looks great. But no, the story is that there's this mysterious samurai that shows up, and he has a mission to get into, I guess, the shogun's castle, because he's after someone. But you don't know who that is, you don't know why, and as the story progresses, you understand more.
So this isn't a massive plot giveaway, but as the name of the program implies, our main character has got blue eyes.
Yeah, in a time where there's no foreigners in Japan.
No foreigners in Japan. And this is actually true. So after the events of Shogun, which is the other TV series, Japan kind of entered a period of isolation, which lasted 200 years, which only started, let's say, it was forced to open up in around 1850, I think. So for a good
when the Americans came and you're like, yeah, you're gonna open up, and they're like, no, and then they're like, yeah, you really are, with big guns.
They forcefully showed them their peaceful ways. Which is true. It's a true story. And but anyway, so Blue Eye Samurai is set in that period where our titular character has clearly got some Western blood and has blue eyes, and as such is ostracized by mainstream Japanese society.
Yeah.
That backstory is cool, and the series and the story is just top-notch, and it has been renewed for season 2. Season 2 has been confirmed, which is never a given with Netflix.
Yeah, right.
Really good. I cannot speak high enough praise. It's so good.
Okay. Then I guess I got to go back and watch those last
and finish it. Yep.
Yeah. I'll do that. Cuz you know what? It's I don't know how it is for you. Well, no. I guess it's different cuz you actually go to work. But like I work from home like a couple days a week. And so during the days that I do, like when I'm having lunch, I'm not at my computer, and I'll just like maybe like watch something while having lunch. So that has always been like a lunchtime series. And then I have my evening ones as well.
Ah.
So that never made it into the evening. So the lunchtime ones, like I'll watch an episode, and then like the next day I'm in the office, the next day I maybe have like a meeting, the next day I'm in the office again. And so like weeks pass. And so that's why I kind of left it on
the back burner.
And also the episodes are actually quite long. I think they're like 40 minutes or something like that. So it's not necessarily something you can watch while eating or watch in like 20 minute, half an hour chunks. It's a little bit longer than that.
I feel like we should give a warning that it's animation, but it's adult animation. So there are many scenes. Boobies. Yeah, there's boobies.
Sorry.
And very, very, very adult themes. So some of them, I would say, I don't want to say disturbing. Like, you don't see anything truly disturbing, but a lot of it is implied.
Yeah, definitely. But it's, I mean, there are scenes in brothels and things like that. So, yeah, it's, don't show this to your kids.
No, don't think, oh, it's animation. Let's watch a samurai it's movie, a kids.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, exactly.
Trauma. And then your college, the money you're putting aside for your kid's college goes to your kid's therapist.
Unless you live in Japan, where they have socialist healthcare.
Exactly. But yeah, no, the really, really, really entertaining, really fun to watch. I would have said an original topic, but now everything seems to be about samurai. So, yeah.
Maybe we had less to talk about than I thought we did, but I think that reaches the end of our of the things that we really kind of wanted to speak about. So we spoke.
There's honorable mentions.
No. Okay, yeah. There's some honorable mentions, but these are A, much older, and B, just like they're honorable mentions. So if we're talking about samurai movies, other cool ones are, for example, a movie with Tom Cruise where he's basically Tom Cruise in Japan, and it's called The Last Samurai.
Does he run in that movie?
He does run in that movie. And that is a reference to a YouTube video, which you guys should watch, which shows there's a direct correlation between how much money a movie makes with Tom Cruise, in which he runs versus he doesn't run. And it's a thing. Like, it is actually a thing, which is crazy.
But except for the last, I mean, that video, which we'll link in the description if we bother to find it, is the was done before the last Mission Impossible movie, which was actually where he does a lot of running, but it was a bit of a flop.
But he is filming the next Mission Impossible.
Yeah, of course, because it was like, what's it called? Like Dead Reckoning Part 1. So that implies there's going to be a Part 2.
But, I don't know, a benefit of the doubt, because I've heard the action was really good in that movie, but it was still like at the end of COVID.
Yeah. It was, But still, but we talked about that movie.
We did.
Like when we talked about the blockbusters are back, and I didn't like it that much. And I actually quite like the Mission Impossible movies.
Anyway, that was an honorable mention, as well as a movie with Keanu Reeves in Japan called 47 Ronin, which has a bit more of a fantasy element, but it's essentially, again, Keanu Reeves is a samurai. No, he's a Ronin, which is a dishonorable samurai in Japan.
Not to be confused with the movie Ronin with Robert De Niro that takes place in France and has nothing to do with samurai or Ronin. I actually don't know why the title of it is that, but whatever. I should watch it again. It's quite good.
It is quite good.
Nothing to do with samurai, but whatever. Des, how is your beer?
Okay, so quick reminder for the audience.
Yes.
This is a beer by the brewing company called 71 Brewing, who are based in Dundee, Scotland. The beer I'm drinking is a Kveik IPA called Luminous Night. It's quite strong at 7.4%. And I don't know, it's fine. It's not bad, but the other beers I've had from this brewery have been very good. Whereas this, I would say, is probably, you know, a good beer, but I was expecting more from them. They describe it as big tropical and citrus notes layered over a juicy body. Again, I'm not getting all of that. I'm just getting kind of your average, very hoppy IPA notes. And I'm not really getting like the fruity aromas. But it is nice. It's just not great. So with that in mind, I would give it like a 3.5 out of a 6-pack.
Okay, 3.5. All right.
How about yours?
So I was just Googling it. And actually there's like a funny bit that, so again, just to recap, it's called Blossom Blonde from the Gebrouwen Brewery in the Netherlands, brewed by women. This is a blonde beer with elderflower. I don't like elderflowers. I've discovered today. So no, I don't particularly love it. I think it's too sweet more than anything. It's fine to drink, but it's just really sweet. Like the elderflower aftertaste, it's just too much for me. So I'm gonna give it a 2.5.
Oh wow, that's low.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. But check this out. On their website, it says Blossom Blonde is our best known and best sold beer. This beer has so many fans, it even receives love poems via mail and social media. This is one of the poems, originally in Dutch but translated in English. Do you want to hear the poem about this beer?
You might as well now.
All right, it's called The Four Seasons. Radiant smile, beautiful blonde woman, infectious beauty. As blonde as young blossom in spring, as radiant as summer, My autumn misses the light. In winter, I lie in wait for your warmth. For 7 winters, I've been frozen deep inside. Will you defrost me? Beautiful summer, let me shine. Drink blonde blossom on the terrace. Written by Thomas Lynn.
Wow. Round of applause.
Yeah, it was incredible. Doesn't make this beer any better. But yeah, not a big fan of elderflower. If you like elderflower, this is actually pretty good for you.
I like elderflower in cocktails. I can't say I've ever had elderflower beer. So, don't know. I think I might give it a pass.
But, or when next time you come to Amsterdam, we'll go to their brewery and give it a try.
Add it to the list of 80 breweries that we need to go see.
We do need to visit a bunch. You should come here like one summer and then we'll just go visit.
All like in a month.
One day. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So summary. Today was our episode based on Samurai. Marco spoke at length of what he considers maybe a masterpiece and possibly the best game set in Japan ever called Ghost of Tsushima, which is great. We also gave a mention to a game which is coming out called Rise of the Ronin, which is probably no way near as...
You have like a throat condition? Are you okay?
Yeah, it's a throat condition.
Rise of is English, man. You don't need to do the voice.
All right. I gave a glowing review of a tactical-based game called Shadow Tactics from 2016, which is also set in feudal Japan. And talking about feudal Japan, we also delved into the world of animation with Blue Eye Samurai, which is on Netflix. Very good. Do go watch that. And if you're more into live-action drama, there is a remake of a beloved series called Shogun, which is on Disney Plus, which is also fantastic and set in feudal Japan. We had a couple of honorable mentions, but they're really old movies, and if you like them, by all means, go and watch them. But we'll leave all those details in the episode notes. On that note, Marco, it's always a pleasure.
Sayonara. Arigato.
Oh my God, how long did you have that in store?
Oh, I Googled that like ages ago.
Oh my.
Talk to you next time.
See you next time, guys.
Samurai.